The great football coach Vince Lombardi once said, "Real glory is being knocked to your knees and then coming back." That's real glory. That's the essence of it. Do you think he's right? That real glory is about being driven down hard, but then managing to get back up on your feet. I know that I love a good comeback story. Who doesn't? Like the horse that was at the back of the pack and comes around that last corner and finds the fire within itself to overcome all the horses at the front of the pack and win the race. I love seeing that kind of story. I remember as a kid watching a few Kentucky Derbies like that. Maybe you did too as well. It's exhilarating to watch. Or the hero who is knocked down again and again and again, but manages somehow to get back up on his feet every time, and then somehow finds a way to win the match or the fight or whatever it might be, like in the Karate Kid movie. I don't remember how many of you remember that movie, that classic. So many movies today actually replay this basic theme of comeback in one form or another. It's a crowd favorite for sure, and we love it. And in real life, we meet people who have lived out the big comeback, like the person who was laid low by a terrible disease or maybe a horrible accident, but against all the odds, manages to return to health. And in the process, they get their life back. You've probably met somebody like that. Maybe a few of you even have that own story for yourself to tell to others. We see it played out in TV sports. The big comeback. My biggest comeback that I ever witnessed was in the Canada-USSR Hockey Championship, the Summit Series. Canada was down 3-1. They had to win the last three games in the Soviet Union to triumph. And it's got to be one of the biggest comebacks of all time in sports that I've ever seen. I still remember as a kid in grade 5, we had this little 17-inch black and white TV with those little elephant ears on the top, rabbit ears. And it was kind of grainy, but we all wanted to watch the hockey game so desperately. And we're in the classroom, we're watching the game, and when Paul Henderson scored that goal right at the end of the third period, a shout went up in our class. A shout went up throughout our whole school. In fact, the whole country celebrated in that moment. It was an exhilarating experience. It was more than just one goal or one game. It was an amazing comeback to be part of. What a comeback. What makes the story of the big comeback so powerful is that it doesn't normally happen. It's the exception, not the rule. In Major League Baseball, the team that scores first usually wins the game. 70% of the time, the team that scores the first run wins the game. Even though it's only a one-run advantage, that usually is a signal of who's going to likely win the game. It's a great predictor of who's going to win that particular game. In the NHL, it's actually 80% of the time, the team that scores the first goal usually wins the game. So for all you Leaf fans, you better hope they get the first goal when they play Ottawa tomorrow. Actually, today. Yeah. Because if they don't get that first goal in the match against Ottawa, they're likely to lose that first match, the first game. In the NFL, it's about 2/3 of the time the team that scores first wins the game. In professional soccer, it's like 95%, I think. Okay, that's just made up, but it's got to be 95%. You know, in hockey, only one team has ever come back in the Stanley Cup down 3-0. It was the 1942 Toronto Maple Leafs, believe it or not. No team in Major League Baseball has ever been down 3-0 in the World Series and ever come back to win it. No team in the NBA championship has ever come down back from 3-0 and win the championship. So I'd like to ask Vince Lombardi how far down you can go before it becomes impossible to come back. How far down can you go before the possibility or the reality of glory is lost to us? What if you're driven down not to your knees but to your ankles? Or to the bottoms of your feet? What happens if you're driven down 6 feet under? Is there a comeback waiting in those situations? Can you overcome that kind of deficit? There's a saying, you probably heard it before, if it doesn't kill you, it makes you stronger, right? It comes from a comment made by the German philosopher Friedrich Nietzsche. He said, "What does not kill me makes me stronger." As long as you have life, everything has the potential to work for good for you. And this saying is often used to encourage people to overcome the challenges that can lead to personal growth and resilience. And it's, as they say, commonly offered as a words of encouragement to people facing tough circumstances. I could imagine Vince Lombardi embracing this phrase of Nietzsche. Real glory is being knocked to your knees and then coming back. That's real glory. That's the essence of it. If it doesn't kill you, it will make you stronger. They essentially say the same thing. But what if you're down 12 runs going into the last inning? Or you're down 6 goals in the first game of the championship series with 5 minutes left to go? Or you're 50 points behind going into the last quarter of the game? What if you get a health diagnosis that's killed everyone else who's ever been given it before? Or what if you're already 6 feet under? What then? Common sense tells us that there are some deficits, some circumstances, some realities that are just too far gone to come back from. They would take a miracle to come back from. What about a guy who's scourged and then crucified and finally laid in a tomb? What are his chances of a comeback? Not too good, I think we'd all agree. It's not like Jesus was the first guy to be crucified. The Romans crucified thousands. They crucified tens of thousands of people before they got to Jesus. And the Romans weren't the first people to crucify. The Assyrians and the Babylonians and the Persians were doing it hundreds of years before the Romans ever got around to it. In the slave revolt led by Spartacus about 100 years before Jesus, when Spartacus' ragtag army was finally defeated by the Romans, they crucified 6,000 men along a highway like the 401 for 100 miles, 150 kilometers. They crucified 6,000 men. So Jesus wasn't the first one to be crucified. But let me ask you this. How many who have been crucified have ever come back from the dead? What's the answer to that question? Before Jesus, it was zero, right? So I don't blame people for having a hard time believing in the resurrection of Jesus. That seems like one comeback story where the deficit seems just a bit too far out of reach. A lot out of reach, actually, if we're honest about it. It's really hard to take it in. Yet that is the story that the first disciples of Jesus took out into the world. That's their story. It's the story about an ultimate comeback, where an insurmountable deficit was overcome. And there really is no equivalent for it in any sphere of life that we know about. The story of Jesus being raised from the dead becomes immediately, and I want to stress this, immediately the central feature of the Christian faith. Jesus tangibly raised from the dead was there from the very beginning of the witness and the proclamation of the earliest church. That's what the church said from the very beginning. What do you say to this claim of the ultimate comeback? As I was mentioning in my April Roots and Sprouts article, our Christian faith rises or falls on what happened on Easter morning almost 2,000 years ago. We might not like it to be that way, but that's just the way it is. If everything else about Jesus could be shown to be legendary, the virgin birth, the angels singing, his teachings, the miracles that he performed, if they were all shown to be exaggerated or at least amplified to some degree, but he still did tangibly rise from the dead, then Christianity would still hold true on the critical feature that gave rise to it. And if everything else about Jesus was proved to be accurate and true, the virgin birth, the angelic choruses, the teaching, the miracles he performed, but he did not tangibly rise from the dead, then the whole edifice of our Christian faith would immediately collapse. It really goes back to the question of the comeback story. How far can someone come back from? What kind of deficit can ultimately be overcome? It's certainly fair to say that those first disciples weren't looking for his comeback. They didn't see it coming. It was a far too remote possibility for them to even consider. They in no way anticipated it. It wasn't on their radar. Why would it be? Up to that point, zero people had come back from death. Zero people had certainly come back from crucifixion. Overcoming a 3-0 deficit in the World Series, that's possible, even if it's never happened yet. It's not beyond the realm of possibilities as we understand it. But someone raised from the dead? And yet, I say to you, why not? If you believe in God, if you believe God is real, and you believe that this God is active in the universe that he created, then why not a resurrection? Why not? I think as we study the universe, we're going to come to understand that the universe that we know today began with a miraculous beginning. We're going to be driven to this explanation. It's going to be forced on us. And we're going to come to understand that the first life on this earth rests on a miraculous beginning, that there will ultimately be no naturalistic explanation for either the origins of the universe or the origins of life. It's going to rest on something we can't explain, and that's going to drive the scientists nuts. And it might drive you nuts too. We don't like unsolvable problems, we don't like unresolvable mysteries, and we don't like untestable hypotheses. But there is Jesus standing before the disciples. They've got this problem, this mystery, this hypothesis. He's standing before them. What are they to do with this? It makes no sense on a certain level of things, but there he is standing before them. What can they do? What can they do with this? Even if it doesn't quite add up to them. I think Jesus was raised tangibly from the dead. I really do. Beyond all the circumstantial evidence that one can muster to support this claim, and the case for Jesus' resurrection, circumstantially speaking, is strong. Belief in his resurrection is not built on blind faith alone. It's about weighing up the evidence. But we're still going to hit that wall eventually. No matter how much evidence we gather, no matter how strong our circumstantial case becomes, it is still ultimately going to be an unsolvable problem for us. An unresolvable mystery, an untestable hypothesis, because it all rests ultimately too on a miracle. And this miracle is standing before those first disciples. And if their testimony is true, then Jesus is alive. He really is alive. And he's standing there before them, and this represents the most remarkable comeback of all time. And there is nothing in our human experience that comes even close to this moment. There's no comeback in any situation that we've ever experienced in our own lives, been witness to or known of, that can compare to Jesus standing before those first disciples. And Jesus' comeback reveals to us that he really is what he says he was. He is the Messiah, the Christ, the Lord. He really came as God's emissary of light and love to us. Jesus is God's answer to our desire to put our lives under our own management, to go it alone apart from God. As John said long ago, so the Word became flesh and lived among us. And we have seen his glory, the glory as a Father's only Son, full of grace and truth. From his fullness we have received grace upon grace. Grace upon grace, or perhaps more easily understood, we have been rescued from ourselves. That is the purpose for which Jesus came to earth. See, God so loved us and so loved the world that he would not leave us or abandon us to ourselves. God would not abandon us to the inevitable consequences of our desire to be separate and apart from him. And even if on the cross we tried to slam the door of God once and for all, we tried to slam that door on God once and for all, in Jesus' resurrection, God took that final and fullest rejection and he flipped it upside down. He flipped it on its head. What should have been our ultimate rejection of God has become the very means by which God will facilitate our comeback. See, Jesus' comeback wasn't for himself. His coming in the first place wasn't for himself. He didn't come to prove anything to us. Jesus came to open a door for us, open a door for our return to God. It's our comeback that he came to us for. He came to make a way for every person to have fellowship and an intimate relationship with God. This is the foundation, the only foundation for our ultimate comeback in life. Fellowship with God. And that door back to God, that comeback to God, that door that leads to our return to God, God stands before the disciples alive 2,000 years ago. And it's that cross there. And the love that is revealed in Jesus' death and vindicated in his resurrection that becomes God's way to us and our way to God. It becomes God's comeback to us and our comeback to God. And to that, I think we say, Alleluia, love is alive, and therefore so are we.